Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Modern Workplace Hacks podcast. My name's Tom Freer and today I am joined by Alex Ferguson, the COO at NanoPution. NanoPution are a serverless architecture platform. So these guys develop solutions for organizations to be able to help them get access to data or move data between different platforms or even report on data in different platforms in a really centralized way. They leverage the AWS platform, and it truly is a serverless platform where there's no Windows servers or Linux boxes sitting there that need to be managed. A little bit of a technical chat here, but I think it should give you some really good insights into thinking about how you can better access and leverage the data. So hopefully you enjoy it and sit back and relax and listen to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Modern Workplace Hacks podcast. My name's Tom Freer, and today I am joined by Alex Ferguson, and I've already forgotten how to say it, NanoPution, so Alex can say the name of it.
NanoPution,
there we go. He literally told me 30 seconds ago, and I forgot how to pronounce it. So Alex is the COO at NanoPution, and Nano are a serverless platform, serverless architecture platform, integration platform. Is that, have I got that right, Alex?
Yeah, that's one of the things we do. So we so we're a serverless application developer, and we're an AWS Select partner. We build cloud native applications. Probably one of the things that's different about us is we only build serverless architectures and serverless solutions for clients, and we can kind of get into that in a little bit in a minute. But yeah, we've built an integration platform, which effectively is a middleware built for developers that allows anyone to connect anything to anything.
Any data anywhere, really? Is that it?
Any data anywhere.
Yep. And I suppose the key thing out of that is that serverless element. So most people, listeners probably familiar, you get servers in the cloud, you put servers in your office and you store data on there. Platform doesn't necessarily store that data, but it allows people to access any of these other data sets. Is that?
No. So we have storage as part of the platform, and we have, So serverless is probably a bit of a misconception for people. And so maybe to explain that a little bit, traditional computing was done on a large server in a room somewhere, in a data center somewhere, or in many cases today, that's still where a lot of people have their workload. And they might have shifted that into the cloud, but ultimately the cloud is still just a set of data servers.
Yep.
There's a server somewhere. And in many cases, when you're provisioning a server in the cloud, there's a server. It's dedicated to you, or there's some virtual machine that's dedicated to your tenancy. But serverless is a different paradigm. And what makes it different is that there is no reserved instance for your compute. So while servers are involved, the services that are being provided by, in our case, AWS, but in, you know, it could be Azure and it could be Google, for example, that compute service can float anywhere within the cloud network and wherever, so you move away from having to manage the physical infrastructure yourself. If it was on-prem, even in the cloud, you don't have to manage the compute infrastructure yourself. It's a hosted service and it's a managed service by AWS. And so therefore, you don't have to worry about the patching, the maintenance, the operation, the scaling, or any of that stuff associated with the compute. But there is a computer somewhere that is doing that thing. And probably the second thing that's different about serverless is that it is ephemeral. It turns on, it does a thing, and then it turns off. And so in many cases today, people are wasting a lot of energy and money on infrastructure that is not being fully utilized. I mean, you would have seen that yourself, Tom, with some of your clients, for example, who had no choice but to be on a server, and that server is sometimes only 30% utilized. And in the serverless space, that just doesn't exist, because every single individual request that might come in to get some data or do something gets handled by a separate instance of compute. And so it will scale up, do a thing, you know, as many things it needs to do, and then it will just turn off. So the client ends up saving quite a bit of money, because not just they don't have to manage the infrastructure, but also because you only pay for the microseconds of compute that it took to provide that data or provide that service to someone.
It's the true nature of cloud. That's sort of the trueness of cloud in its most operationally efficient format then. Because we all talk about the cloud now, but as you say, we're literally moving a physical server into a virtual server. Yeah, yeah, and it's still, as you say, we're still managing a component of resource to do a task. But in this serverless computer, yeah, it's in the cloud and it's on Amazon servers. But from a client perspective, we are truly just using what we consume when we need it.
Yeah, it's the true definition of on-demand, because it is on-demand, turn on, do a thing and turn off. And it's more than just compute. So it's database and it's file storage and object storage and all the things that you have used as part of a traditional computing environment now has a serverless alternative. And they can scale from zero, you know, you're using no compute this month, so it didn't cost you anything, up to, you know, the last calc we did for a particular client was, you know, 40 million users of your app and that you've created, or billions of transactions a day, and you didn't even have to touch it.
It just scale to what it needs.
Automatically.
Yeah. Now, I think the key thing here is, though, that the application or the function has to be developed for this environment. We can't traditionally pick up a traditional client server application and literally just put it on serverless architecture.
No, that's right. In many cases, for large software that it already exists, shifting to serverless will require some refactoring of how their code works. But that's not to say that you need to do it all at once either. And in many cases, you've got legacy systems that simply you know, have a desire to move into a serverless space, but ultimately, you know, they need some kind of roadmap to get there, and they can't turn them off because they've got clients in them, sort of thing.
Yep.
So there are models for managing that. You know, you can create a strangler model, which is a serverless layer that kind of, you know, envelops your entire software solution, and then piece by piece start to carve it out.
Take certain functions out of that legacy app.
So think like database reads, for example. If you're going to get, if you've got an API and all it's really doing is just going to the database and getting some data, you know, you don't necessarily need to. You can start to bypass some of that functionality that might have been built into your monolithic legacy application and go straight to the data source and get it. You know, so you can build integration layers above your application that allow you to, you know, progressively carve out piece by piece the things that you need to actually also increase performance on your application as well, because now, you know, that main application that's running on your server isn't having to deal with all the read operations of your database, and sometimes isn't even, you know, then doesn't need to deal with some certain write things, but might be handling some of the more complicated business logic where you need to do validation and checking of data before it.
So as a working example, say client has a legacy, I don't know, CRM or something like that in their office or even in the cloud on a Windows server, but they might want to create a client portal. That's something you could create in a serverless environment to just access that data in the way that it needs to be accessed for that client activity.
Yeah, completely. So you know, like if you just take a look at our website, for example, nanofusion.io, the entire website is actually deployed serverlessly, and you know that's highly performant, but that's built on an infrastructure stack which That same stack can be used for a modern web application, so React, Angular, Vue, framework for, as a front end can be built and deployed and run completely serverlessly. So you can still build, you can build your web application that then interfaces with whatever legacy applications you have.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So that's, I guess that's a really good sort of way for clients to think about if they're stuck in these, they feel stuck in those apps that they've got, but they know there's so much more they can do within their business. And it might be, as I say, it might be adding some functions that clients might need. It may be, I think we were talking about it before, reporting, maybe another aspect where they have all this data sitting inside this database somewhere, but there's no real clear way to get access to it to visualize it.
Yeah, and that's where that's where NanoConnect comes in. And that's the platform that we've built is really around democratizing access to data in the business and to a business's customers. And recognizing that there are a lot of legacy systems out there that don't really, play well, don't have APIs, have poorly accessible data. NanoConnect helps connect to those systems with a single line of code, and then gets out of the way of the developer in terms of the complexity of the logic or the analysis that you want to do. And so as an example of a use case, recently we've been working with a customer, they have data from a few different sources and they're all different systems. And so trying to pull all of that into Power BI when one's behind a firewall and another one's an OAuth 2 authenticated system and another one that's API key and it's all very distinct data sets that don't really talk to each other. The analysis of the to combine that data in Power BI becomes incredibly challenging. It requires custom development in order to achieve. And so what we've been able to do is say, well, okay, well, you can get your data from those platforms with a single line of code, transform them and model them in any that data in any way you want and store it in NanoConnect in your file storage and then serve that via an API to your Power BI and in a way that Power BI can just consume that without any difficulties. And so one of the kind of light bulb moments for the BI developer was, so I don't have to do it all in DAX. That's right, you don't.
So this allows an organization to pick disparate data sets and essentially present them in a consistent way that an application like Power BI can then just consume. And then as an end user, okay, I need data from that system, data from that system in this one dashboard, and there it is.
Yeah, that's right.
In its most simplest form.
And so if you want to do some transformations in transit, the platform, you can build an app or an integration in the platform that'll do that.
So what do you mean by that? By transformations?
Yeah, so if you want to model that data in some way or you want to, for example, you might have data coming from the platform, which might be date times or a particular in a particular format, and you want to turn that into another date time format,
right?
And you just want to simplify the now I'm choosing a really simple example here. I'm not the right one, and just send the proper formatted dates to people when they connect in Power BI. You can have that done in transit while the data's coming through, so you can build what you build in that in the middle between system A and system B. System B could be Power BI, system A might be your CRM. So you're getting your CRM data and you're doing some kind of transformation and sending it there. Or through our BI connector, you can just get your CRM data coming straight through NanoConnect with no modification whatsoever and going straight to your Power BI. So that's, if you've got zero data, for example, great use case because Power BI can hit our API without any issues, but talking to zero is quite hard. Those are a couple of use cases. And a third is really around, that's kind of talking about reporting data. A third use case really is around integrations themselves. So if you have a system, Like say you've got JotForm, you know, and people are filling out forms. You might want every time that form is completed for data to be sent to someone, or for to add that data to your CRM, or to do something like that. So you can build the logic in our platform that would say, okay, whenever I receive JotForm data, I'm going to put that data into a Google spreadsheet, or put it into a, you know, into my CRM.
Yep.
And you can
Zapier at large scale.
Exactly. Zapier, and probably
but built for enterprise.
Built for enterprise. So deployable into an enterprise customer's environment.
Yeah.
It's still cloud, but running in their cloud.
Yep.
And unlike Zapier, and Tray and Make and MuleSoft and Boomi and all of those other platforms, which you know, they've gone down the road of the low-code, no-code citizen coder environment, which ultimately constrains what you can do.
Yep.
So we said, well, no, what if we built a solution that allows people to develop their solution in JavaScript, and we provide all of the orchestration and management of that code, and but ultimately simplify it to the point where you don't have to be a JavaScript expert. You just have to know a little bit. You don't have to know how to connect to JotForm. We provide you an example of one line of code. Go and get your stuff from Go and get whatever I want from JotForm. And if JotForm goes and changes their API tomorrow, it won't affect us, the platform. It might affect your code, but it's all very clear in code what you're actually doing.
Yep. So it provides that. I mean, it is that, that integration piece of, again, moving that information around, getting access to it in a format that makes sense to the whoever needs to consume it, I guess, or drop it into a system where it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So you mentioned you've got the Nano Connect. Is that more of a marketplace style platform, or is it still a built for specific enterprise, or is that what your full product is, I guess?
It's the full product, and it's deployable as an enterprise solution. So, you know, if a customer said, "I want this in my AWS environment," no problem. Mm-hmm. We can deploy that and manage that. There's advantages to that, obviously. That low cost of the infrastructure and the fact that they don't have to maintain it. It's just always there. And then there's a hosted version, which is so we host a version, which is the public version of Nano Connect, where developers and partners and clients can come and create an account and solve their own problems. And then we also help customers who would like support building those integrations. We will build them for them.
And that was my next question. So if anyone's sort of thinking about, okay, I've got this idea and I've got these multiple systems and I'm really not sure how to connect them, you can actually take them through that whole process. They don't need a team of developers. They don't need to be the developers themselves. They just need to know what outcome they're trying to achieve, and you can take them through.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, we have a separate offering specifically around payroll connectivity. And so connecting people's payroll to their HR and finance systems, because internally in our business, we've got a number of people who have lived in the payroll space for a long time. And we've spent the last year or so building payroll integrations just because of the people we knew. So it really helps to have someone who can map out the the logic of what needs to happen, and who understands in that particular space, understands the industry and the compliance matters and the other things that need to be thought of in terms of how you manage employee data and so on. And so typically the process is to come in, map out those integrations, map out the logic, get the client to agree that this is, how they want the data processed in a non-technical way, and then to go and, build the integration in the technical solution to deliver the outcome and test it with the client. And if we, as you're aware, Tom, we're currently growing our partner network, and part of that is realizing that, you can't, we don't want to solve everyone's integration problems, and we have a platform that is, designed to be an open ecosystem. And so we're looking for more partners, and we're looking for, you know, other developers who want to develop on the platform. We're looking for clients who want to, you know, solve their automation problems. And if and we're also looking at, well, if we have more clients than we can possibly serve, or in many cases, we're now looking at, well, how do we provide opportunities to the partner to solve those problems for a customer?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What, I mean, you guys have been doing this for a little while now. How long have you been running in these serverless platforms?
So the business was set up for serverless
native, straight out of the box. It's not a conversion from
something. 6 or 7 years ago, the company was started, and so the business has been focused on serverless the entire time.
Yeah, okay.
So it's never built anything other than a serverless solution.
Yep.
And you know, I joined the business about a year and a half or more ago, and in that time, we've taken the lessons of many years of building custom software solutions and turn that into a platform.
Yep.
And then, you know, we've you know, we were ultimately the first customer of our platform. So we, you know, building integrations for our clients on our platform.
Yep.
And you know, I think the first set of clients we had was roughly August, September last year in the platform.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Excellent. Now, you mentioned something earlier around the low code, no code. And I think a lot of people have heard of that. Obviously, we play a lot in the Microsoft space. So we've got Power Automate, Power Apps, those type of things. And I think the key thing that you mentioned was, and the Zapiers and all those ones, there are constraints in what those low code apps can actually deliver. And I guess that's where you're positioning yours is, okay, well, it's a platform still, but you've got absolute flexibility to do what you need to do as a business, and you're not sort of, I guess, pigeonholed into what's available in that particular platform.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly right. And part of the philosophy behind you know, our technology choices was realizing that if you want to write something in low code, no code, ultimately, there's a little bit of coding involved.
Mm. I think that's one thing people don't realize.
And actually, not a little, sometimes quite a lot. Yep. If you want to do something efficiently, you'll code it. If you want to do it inefficiently, you'll end up with lots of boxes on the page and not really any, no one has any clue how this thing works. And so low code, no code works up to a point, and that point arrives very quickly, where you now need to specialize in the platform and learn how that platform solves problems. And so it's not a transferable skill set. And then if you go to a platform like, you know, so that's Power Automate, perfect example. You need to understand how each of those little connectors work. Mm. And sometimes they don't work the way that you thought they did. Particularly when it comes to like parallel processing and so on, things that you start to worry about when you're looking at lots of data
at scale. Yep.
Yeah. And so then if you look at a platform like a MuleSoft or Tray, they often provide a module you can drop on the page where you can just write your own code. Mm. But in doing so, they then also constrain what you can write. Like you can write JavaScript, but just pure JavaScript. There's no libraries, that's just it. That ultimately someone's going to have to code something, and you're probably going to spend a lot of time upskilling on learning how the platform does all the things it does. Wouldn't it be better if we just build a platform that was based on one of the most common coding languages on the planet, which is JavaScript?
Yep.
And so our platform is built around the ability for someone to write their code in JavaScript, to bring in their own JavaScript libraries if they want to. So it's Node.js in the back end, BYO third-party library if you want.
Yep.
We've got some in there for you that are commonly used. And on top of that, you really don't want to have to figure out how to talk to a Microsoft Graph. So we'll handle that for you. Just one line of code.
Just Just drop this into your JavaScript and it'll now connect into Microsoft. Yep.
Tell me which URL you want to hit and I'll go and get the data for you.
Yeah.
And I'll use the credentials that you've set up in the system to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're looking partners aware, so developers who would primarily use the platform.
Yeah, so a partner would be someone who's looking to build on the platform for their clients.
Yep.
You know, WinTech might be a partner sometime soon, hopefully, for those who are interested. So then as part of that, we're looking at rewards for the client ultimately, because we'd like clients to be supported. Mm. So the ultimate customer needs to be supported by their integration partner.
Yep.
And so we provide a commercial framework around the partner model. That means that a client can get discounted pricing based on the fact that they're working with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't stop them doing it themselves. They can still build their own integrations.
Yeah, yeah.
It's their account. But then also benefits to the partner in terms of the partner program. And then onboarding and training. And probably that's the other thing. I don't know, you could probably tell me better now that you've done it a few times. How long does it take you to upskill someone in a Power Automate?
Yeah, well, we've got to find someone with skills in that platform. And then they've got to build those skills from scratch,
you're probably looking at weeks or months.
Ah, yeah, easily. Yeah.
Easily. Yeah. So we onboarded a C# developer, third party, into the partner program about a month ago. Never touched JavaScript in his life, but you've done some coding. Get a 1-hour introductory session. 1 day later, he had integrations running between Jotform and Asana.
Yep. There it goes. Yeah.
Yep.
And this is not, this is as you sort of it said there, this is not about necessarily replacing what you're doing. It can sort of augment what you're doing as well. You may have a massive investment already in Power Automate, but you might be finding some limitations of where you can get data from. Well, there's no reason you can't then interface that into Nano Connect to then feed it the data it needs.
Oh, exactly. You might find that it doesn't have to be Power Automate. You might find you've invested in Tray or Zapier already. And what you might, particularly for developers, you might find that actually it's really hard to take just that little bit of thing that I did for that other client, that little bit of code in my Zap, and deploy it over here. Or template this solution and then deploy it to all my clients. And so we're building in code. Becomes really easy. Is like, I've got the code. I just go and put it in that other client environment, and away it goes.
And away it goes.
Set up a job. It's a 2-minute job now to onboard a new client to do the same thing that we're doing before.
Wow.
But you still might find that actually there's some really simple problems that Zapier does out of the box that we'd like, that we like, and so we'll keep that. So we're not proposing to be a replacement for everything, although we could. In many cases, it's which tool is best for the job. And for us, we find that the answer to that is the moment there is even the remotest amount of complexity, what does complex look like? It can be simple as I want to get that data, but I want to filter it to just a subset of that data. And just doing that can be quite challenging in any of the low-code platforms today, and can also take you from a $35 a month fee up to a $250 a month fee just because you want that one function.
Right? Check your licensing. Yeah. Whereas in the Nano Connect, it's usage.
I don't care. It's actually not even that. So our pricing is built around the connector.
I don't care.
How complicated a logic you use, how many steps, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many times you use it. So you can hit it 100 times, 1,000 times. There's no limits on that right now at all. Currently, the pricing model is purely around how many connectors do you need? Which is for us.
How many apps do you need to connect to? Yep.
That's right. And for us, that's the thing that we have to maintain. And because serverless is so low cost, it doesn't cost us much to keep the platform operational.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
So
that's pretty good.
Very transparent pricing around, and fixed, because you know that I don't have any more connectors.
I've got three, and that's all I need, and they're the only three apps that I'm using, and that's it. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Now, how do people get hold of you, Alex? What's the best way?
Well, you can email me at alex.ferguson, that's F-E-R-G-U-S-O-N, at nanopushin.io, and I'm sure you'll provide...
I will put that a link on there.
If you are interested in any of our services and you want to, or you just want to read a little bit more, you can visit our website at nanopushin.io, that's N-A-N-O-P-U-T-I-A-N.io.
And I will drop that in the link as well. Alex, been fantastic. Thank you very much.
No, thanks for that, Tom. We appreciate the time.
That's all right. Catch up soon.